Good evening. This is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday night, March 23rd, 2020. Ahead this hour, a new food pantry opens on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Mercy Clinic begins a drive-through testing site in Rogers, and what public housing is doing in the time of a pandemic. Tonight, after this evening edition of Ozarks at Large, all things considered, NPR and KUAF begin a new nightly series of national conversations about COVID-19. With COVID-19 changing daily life and news breaking by the hour, it can be hard to stay up to date. Join Ari Shapiro and All Things Considered staff for a live conversation about what you need to know about what's coming next and a chance to get your questions answered. The live national conversation with NPR News tonight at 8, right after this Ozarks at Large. This weekend, Governor Asa Hutchinson addressed a pressing need, more personal protective equipment for the state's medical professionals. PPEs, including gowns and masks, are being used in rapid fashion as more tests are conducted for COVID-19 and more patients are cared for in hospitals. The governor says Arkansas has set aside $30 million to acquire PPEs.
Now, the federal government bought up most of the domestic supply, put it in their national strategic storehouse in which the states can request allocation of personal protective equipment. We received 25% of the amount of PPE that we requested. These are masks, they're gowns, they're gloves, things that are essential in the medical community. And then after we exhaust that supply, then we're on our own. While we have devoted $30 million of state money to front load and make sure that we can procure immediately, you have to recognize the atmosphere that's out there. Our procurement team tells me that the supply is bottleneck. The supply is just not sufficient domestically. And we are looking internationally. We're looking at manufacturing our own to the extent we have that capacity. And we're working with FEMA to release more of the strategic national stockpile to Arkansas. But as we are procuring, trying to define sources in which we can spend the $30 million that we've put up front, we're competing with New York. We're competing with California. Competing with all the 50 states, we're competing with England, we're competing with Germany, and every country because it's a global pandemic.
The governor says the state is trying to buy in large quantities, and that will require overseas action as well as manufacturing. And today, faculty and administrators at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith sent more than 100,000 pieces of personal protective equipment to the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. A press release from UAFS today reports more than 70,000 gloves, 1,500 masks, and a little over 100 gowns were sent to UAMS today. The UAFS College of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics and College of Health gathered the PPEs Sunday night and earlier today. This is an evening edition of Ozarks at Large. This afternoon, in his daily briefing regarding the coronavirus outbreak, Governor Asa Hutchinson made a number of announcements. The first is that he is pushing back the state tax filing and payment deadlines to July 15th.
This mirrors the same deadline as the federal government, which makes it the easiest for individual filers. This should provide relief and consistency for individual Arkansas taxpayers.
The deadlines for filing and payment for corporate taxpayers, however, remains the same. The governor says because of this change and the lost revenue from the current slowdown in business, the state is facing a $353 million budget shortfall over the next 3 months.
This necessitates a special session of the General Assembly to fill the holes in the budget.
I'll be working with the legislative leadership again to identify the specific time frame for this special session. It will clearly need to be soon.
Governor Hutchinson says the state plans to dip into the $173 million reserve fund to fill any gaps in funding for the Department of Health and Emergency Management so as not to have an impact on the work they're doing during the COVID-19 outbreak. But the governor added some of those reserve funds will have to stay in place just in case the state needs to use them for additional emergency equipment like ventilators. All this, the governor says, will need to be discussed during the special legislative session. The governor also provided an update on where the state stands on ordering more personal protective equipment.
I'm pleased to say that because of the efforts of our procurement team, we do have an order for production for up to 2 million units. And some portion of those 2 million units are scheduled to be available for shipment late this week.
The governor says additional PPE will also be shipped from the National Strategic Stockpile. Secretary of Health Nate Smith also provided an update on the number of cases in the state.
I want to give a quick update on the numbers. An increase of 9 is the smallest increase that we've had in a single for several days. And the largest reason for this is that we've been focusing our testing on the nursing homes, the 3 nursing homes where we've had cases.
Since this afternoon's briefing, the number of cases, as determined by the Arkansas Department of Health, is now 197. Dr. Smith says they are testing all the patients and staff at the 3 nursing homes, including one in Centerton, that together account for 38 of the coronavirus cases in Arkansas. But Dr. Smith adds they're encouraged by the number of negative results they're receiving. He also issued a new directive to limit the community spread of COVID-19.
We've made the decision to send out a directive for barber and beauty shops, nail salons, massage therapists, and tattoo studios to cease operation temporarily until we get past our COVID-19 outbreak.
As far as 2 malaria drugs that President Donald Trump has pointed to as a possible treatment for coronavirus, Dr. Smith says there's no indication that either are effective against COVID-19.
These drugs have been FDA approved for other indications, but not for treatment of COVID-19. So I urge caution, especially from our medical community. There's the potential to cause some very serious harm.
And lastly, the Arkansas Surgeon General, Dr. Greg Bledsoe, had this message for medical providers regarding the potential shortage of PPE.
We take this very seriously. You're right, you need PPE, and we are working diligently to use every means possible to get the PPE that you need to take care of patients when they arrive in your community.
The Arkansas Department of Health also unveiled a new map on its website to track COVID-19 cases. Dr. Nate Smith says the map will be updated 4 times a day.
This is an important time for all of us to be well informed. Hi, this is KUAF General Manager Lee Wood. KUAF and NPR are bringing you reliable information about the coronavirus, facts and advice from the nation's top healthcare professionals, and information about schools, workplaces, and public gatherings and events. We're able to bring you this important coverage thanks to the generosity of our listeners. Please join them. Your donation supports this important work. Give online at supportkuaf.com. For yourself and for the benefit of thousands of listeners who rely on us every day.
This is Ozarks at Large. Mercy is the latest healthcare provider to offer a drive-through COVID-19 evaluation site in Northwest Arkansas. Mercy opened its Rogers site Friday morning and is staffing it with healthcare professionals outfitted in personal protective equipment or PPE. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
To get an appointment at the mobile site, patients must first call a hotline to have their symptoms screened. According to a press release, the Mercy Coronavirus Evaluation Site is for patients who have a fever of at least 100.4 degrees and respiratory symptoms, including cough or shortness of breath, and either travel to a high-risk area or contact with a known patient. Will Tommy, Executive Director of Operations, says drive-through sites like Mercy's help patients get care while still practicing social distancing.
So by them calling over the phone, it prevents them from showing up to the clinic and, you know, possibly exposing others or showing up to the hospital or emergency department. And then by them actually doing the drive-through, it keeps them in their car And further limits the potential for exposures.
Tommy says anyone who calls the hotline will be put in contact with a nurse who will ask a series of questions. If a caller is determined to be at risk, they will be given an appointment, at which time they can drive to the mobile collection site where they will be tested.
The process for whenever somebody shows up, to the test collection site is that they pull in, it's confirmed that they actually have an appointment. They then proceed forward where it's under a tent. Under the tent, there's someone from lab and a nurse there, and they're both in PPE, and then they do a test collection, and it's a nasal test collection. And then from there, it's sent off for processing.
Mercy officials say it's been taking 4 to 5 days to get test results. At a press conference Friday, Secretary of Health Dr. Nate Smith said Arkansas's testing capacity as a state is increasing quite a bit, and he recognizes there is still some confusion about the process.
With the commercial lab testing, there's a little bit of confusion out there, I think, amongst the providers. They can order those and send them to commercial labs without permission from the Department of Health. If we have a case that needs expedited resulting through the Arkansas Department of Health Public Health Laboratory, that's where they need to call and get permission to send that into us. But private providers, clinicians can just go ahead and order those, send those off to the commercial test without permission from the Department of Health.
Mercy's new drive-through evaluation site is located at 2090 South Promenade Boulevard in Rogers. Both the evaluation site and the hotline are operational from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday and from 8 a.m. to noon Saturday and Sunday. The hotline can be reached at 479-717-7585. Anyone seeking a test must call that number before arriving. Officials say people not pre-screened will be turned away. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Washington Regional, also operating a hotline, as well as COVID-19 clinics in Fayetteville and Eureka Springs. Community Clinic, offering screenings at clinics in Prairie Grove, Siloam Springs, Springdale, and Rogers. More information about all of these sites available at our website, KUAF.com. Antoinette Grajeda, like the rest of the team at 91.3, working to make sure we can bring you updated information. She's also on the air at 5:30 and 7:30 each morning with newscasts inside Morning Edition. And a bit more from her now. The Northwest Arkansas Mutual Aid Pantry popped up on Dixon Street last week to help people who are feeling an impact by the COVID-19 pandemic. It's being organized by the Young Democrats of Arkansas, the University of Arkansas Young Democrats, and the Democratic Socialists of Northwest Arkansas. Alyssa Allen is a freshman and vice president of the University of Arkansas Young Democrats. Antoinette reached her by phone last week to learn more about the new initiative.
We just have recognized that there is a huge need that's about to arise as a result of the coronavirus. I myself just got laid off yesterday, and I know that a lot of my friends have been being laid off. Like, I know at least 10 people within the past day that have been laid off. So we know the need is about to increase so much that we decided that we were going to try and fill that need and make sure that people didn't have to feel the hurt as much. So we made a food pantry, and it's not targeted at students. It's targeted at anyone in need. As Democrats, we try to fight for things like livable wages and food for everyone. And this is a situation where legislation probably isn't going to help us as much as community action will. So that's what we're doing.
And so how does the pantry work? Where is it located and what do you need?
So we are at 647 West Dixon Street. We accept donations at any time. Right now, we're pretty good on everything except for children's medicine, but I don't want people to go out and buy children's medicine if they don't need it, because it's been really, really hard for families in need. Just a regular family, even a upper middle class family, they aren't able to find the children's Tylenol whenever they need it. So then they are also having to forgo their needs. But we are accepting canned goods. We do accept perishable items because we do have refrigerator and freezer space. So I don't want anyone to feel discouraged and not bring perishable items, because they will be taken in time for sure. They won't get expired, and there is space for them.
It's not easy to start a food pantry. How were you able to get one started so quickly? And you mentioned refrigerators. That's not always an easy get for a food pantry. So how were you able to accomplish that?
my friends and I are very community oriented. So a lot of our social media friends are like-minded, and they share similar goals, like making sure that people stay fed. So we put it out on social media. We did an all call within our groups, and we came together and we brought, first we had food, and it we operate out of what used to be Josh Mahoney's Senate office. So he had left too many fridges, and that gave us the idea for a refrigerator space. So then we put an all call out for refrigerators, and we had overwhelming support from the community. We had like 5 fridges donated in one day and a freezer. So it's really good to know that even if people are losing their jobs, they don't have to lose their quality of life. It's as far as we can help.
How has the reaction been to your pantry so far? It's only been about a week or so.
We've had overwhelming support and just general happiness from our community that we're there. And that we're able to provide a space for everyone to come together and donate if they can and take if they need. Because that's exactly what we want.
Okay. What else should we know? Anything?
That we definitely make a point to not poverty shame or to make any assumptions about anyone. As someone who used to have to go to food pantries growing up, I know what it's like, and I definitely don't want anyone to feel discouraged or like they're going to be judged or shamed or, you know, made to feel like they don't belong whenever they come to the NWA Mutual Aid Pantry. Everyone belongs. There's no shame in a need, especially in a time of a national crisis amid a global pandemic.
That was Alyssa Allen, Vice President of the University of Arkansas Young Democrats, one of the groups helping run the new Northwest Arkansas Mutual Aid Pantry. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda reached her by phone last week. Since that conversation, organizers have made some changes to the pantry. Going forward, the pantry will be open from 4 to 7 every day. In-person donations are still being accepted, but they should be dropped outside the door during hours of operation. They will be disinfected before being brought inside. Distribution will now move toward a delivery-only method. More information available by calling 283-8389 or by emailing givingar@gmail.com. The phone number again, 283-8389, email address givingar@gmail.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Washington Regional's Her Health Clinic provides comprehensive care for women of all ages, including gynecological exams, prenatal care and deliveries, infertility treatments, and women's primary care services. Located in Washington Regional's Women and Infant Center, Fayetteville, and the Springdale Center for Health in Harbor Meadows. WRegional.com for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. As more of us practice social distancing and begin hunkering down at home, the Fayetteville Housing Authority is continuing operations. The Housing Authority runs several public housing properties, as well as a voucher program for those who are in need of subsidized rent. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with the FHA Executive Director, Angela Belford, about whether they're doing anything differently as they help people find stable housing.
How is the Housing Authority operating right now? Have you had to make any changes in light of the outbreak?
Well, I have to start by saying I am extremely grateful to building a very strong team over the last year. We have an amazing group of people that are dedicated and committed to our community. We haven't closed our office officially, so our staff continues to show up and work. We do, with that in mind, we do are keeping staff safe. So those that were at high risk, whether they've had the flu or pneumonia recently, we are protecting them and allowing them to work from home. So it starts with a great team that is extremely dedicated to our clients and making sure that people are, we recognize that we are, you know, as always, serving those in our community that are among the most vulnerable.
So the Housing Authority operates its own public housing properties, but you also administer a voucher program that allows people to rent housing on the private market through a subsidy on their rent. Have you had to make any adjustments as people maybe lose hours at work or become unemployed because of all the businesses that are shutting down or adjusting their hours because of this outbreak?
What we've done is try to really leverage technology, which is a continuing theme that we've seen at the Housing Authority over the last year. And we have done things like posted on our website an income verification form. So that way, if you've lost your job or you have reduced salary because of the job transition, then you can report that online. And we've asked you to give us your employer's phone numbers, but won't require the paper verification at this time. We will verify it later in all the methods that we do. But for now, they'll be able to report that. And what's important about that is that we will issue checks to our landlords on the first of the month, and that will still happen. And anyone that has reported that income change, then we can make an adjustment to their rent immediately, and it'll go into effect as soon as they report that to us. So that means that those that would be worried about getting their rent paid next month won't have to worry about that. It's also exciting because we have had a number of people over the last several months that have been kind of transitioning out of the program, meaning that they've begun to make enough money to be able to support themselves. And this program has a great safety net for those folks so that if something changes in 6 months of that, then you're still right back in the program. So we consider that no housing assistance, but if something happens, say they went 2 months ago and they were paying their full rent themselves, they could just contact us and report their income and we will pick them right back up. So that's exciting.
What about residents who live in the public housing properties that you run?
You know, there's a large percentage of folks that are on fixed income already. So they're just going to stay pretty much the same during this time frame. Our most important thing with our people that live in public housing is to keep them safe. And so that is especially at Hillcrest Towers, we have elderly and disabled, so we are on a regular routine disinfectant schedule. We have changed up the entries so that way everyone has to be screened, asking them the questions that create vulnerability. At some point, we may have to go to screening to where it's only medically necessary. Right now, we are a housing facility. We're not a medical facility, so we do try to give our folks as much freedom as is safe for them. And so we have lots of recommendations about how to keep themselves safe. Meals on Wheels delivers to us each lunch day. And so instead of people coming to the community room and sitting and eating their meals, then we have those in boxes. And so they just pick them up and they can go back to their truly grab and go. We've seen a tremendous outpouring of support from our community. Like St. Paul's, they have grab and go, and so any supplements we need, then we're able to get those from them.
I saw a Facebook post you made about piloting a kind of pen pal program with some of the folks who live at Hillcrest Towers. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? We know it's a pilot, but where are you thinking of heading with this?
Yeah, so we're piloting, and I maybe shouldn't have started a Facebook post when I was just doing a pilot program. I was just so excited because it gave the six residents we chose for the pilot program an opportunity to just have something to look forward to, that they're going to get mail. And I've been in contact with the small group that is wanting to do that. And so they're asking things like, can I do a self-addressed stamped envelope? How do I do that? We've heard from Dayspring Cards that's going to donate some cards for our folks if they want to write back. Obviously we have to be very concerned about the coronavirus, but I already had a very high sensitivity to our folks that feel isolated and feel alone just in general, because you're maybe an older person that doesn't have family and you live in public housing. So I was already really hyper aware of that. And then trying to lock people down, I'm just more aware. So we're going to test this out. If we can get it streamlined where we can keep our residents' privacy safe, as well as, you know, screen the people that are writing to them, then they can And we're going to do that. Of course, anybody, if they want to send a card to just any resident, sort of like, you know, we do to our soldiers, they could send it to Fayetteville Housing Authority, Attention Justin Lee, 1 North School Avenue, Fayetteville, Arkansas, 72701. And Justin can distribute those to people that aren't necessarily signed up for the program. But we're looking forward to maybe finding a really streamlined way to get people paired up.
And are you still moving people into housing as it becomes available? Because stable housing is important no matter what, but I imagine it's even more important now.
Yeah. Again, my committed staff is amazing. We have gotten approval to do video inspections for people that are like what's called lease in place. So if you're issued a voucher and you are already in housing, but you're maybe probably struggling to make your rent payment, our HUD field office is allowing us to do a video inspection if you're already in the unit. If the unit is empty and you're just going to be moving in, then, you know, that's a pretty safe place for us to go and inspect. So we're doing those inspections for people that had already had a voucher and they'd already been looking. And I saw several of the tenancy applications come through this week because landlords are going to need those places leased up as well. So we are moving forward with those. And then as far as our public housing, we're going real slow, you know, but we want to make sure that all of our units are cleaned and sanitized. And then we had people that were kind of in process that we are moving slowly, screening everyone we come in contact with to see if they have any risk factors to keep our folks safe. But yeah, we are absolutely, we believe that during this time, it is critical for people to have housing where they can stay in place and be able to wash their hands. And so if we can contribute to that in any small way, then we're going to, because we're well aware of our folks that are experiencing homelessness and how difficult this time is.
And you also do a lot of work with the unsheltered population in our region as well. What kind of steps are being taken in regards to that vulnerable population that doesn't have a home to go to?
You know, last Thursday I went to the grocery store, and as the shelves were emptying, I had to fight everything not to just stand there in tears for the people that wouldn't get paid until Friday and be able to stock up on Friday. The way that people think right now, the fear that they feel about, well, am I going to be able to get the food I need? There's a lot of the folks in our community that live silently like that every day. And so I'm extremely worried about our folks experiencing homelessness. I can't think about it very much. Otherwise, I will just curl up in a ball and cry. It was in the great radio interview, but sorry. I just like...
No, I mean, it's true. There's a lot of people out there who don't have a safe place to stay.
Yeah. So right now, the comfort I take with the people that are vulnerable is that we have built an incredible coalition of folks that serve people experiencing homelessness. I know that our continuum of care members are meeting on a weekly basis on a conference call. Don't be alarmed. They have a weekly conference call to provide support to one another, as well as ideas and resources. And with the number of people that I have to be responsible for at the Housing Authority, I just have to rest assured that my team with the continuum of care is doing a phenomenal job. And just like my staff is committed to those that are the most vulnerable, I know that those people that are part of the continuum of care are doing absolutely everything that is humanly possible to be able to serve those that are the most vulnerable. These are very strange times that we live in. And if this increases our entire nation's capacity for compassion for those that are less fortunate, maybe that'll be the silver lining of this. Maybe we will all have gotten a taste of what it feels like, and we can all realize how we need to come together.
Fayetteville Housing Authority Executive Director Angela Belford speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. Belford is also on the board of the Northwest Arkansas Continuum of Care, which is a nonprofit coalition of organizations and advocates whose goal is to end homelessness. We speak with the chairman of the group, tomorrow on Ozarks at Large about what local nonprofits who work with the unsheltered populations are doing in the wake of the coronavirus outbreak. That's on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF.
For 35 years, KUAF has connected you to your community. And during this time of uncertainty and isolation, that's what we continue to do with KUAF Connects, our new phone line dedicated to taking listener messages from questions about everything from homeschooling to staying active while social distancing to how you're staying in touch with family and friends. KUAF is dedicated to bringing you news and information, but also to sharing the diverse voices of our neighbors, colleagues, and friends. Tell us what you've been doing to keep your spirits up this past week, and you might even hear your message on air. Give us a call at 479-575-6577 and leave your message after the beep.
We do want to hear from you, and we're getting your messages. Here are some of your neighbors letting us all know how they're faring during these odd days, beginning with a familiar voice to Ozarks at Large listeners.
My name is Raven Cook, and I'm calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas. And to go along with the incredible work that we've done with Reflections in Black, we're going to start a weekly course in African American history for families to see. It'll be an introductory course that'll start on next Tuesday. That's next Tuesday, March 24th, excuse me. So we'll have an intro to Black history class that'll be live streaming on Facebook on Tuesday, March 24th, 2020, as a complement to our Reflections in Black programming. So that's what I've been doing over this moment of social distancing. I've been working on Reflections in Black and also building Black history programming for our city.
Hi, Fayetteville. It's Misha Gardner here, and I today was working at the Washington County Prosecutor's Office as a paralegal, and I've just been amazed at everybody, all my coworkers, and how hard they're working to adapt to all the changes that are going on, and just making sure all these defendants have their hearings in a timely fashion. It's been amazing to watch that happen. But after that, after a long day of that, the sun came out for a little bit, so I decided to go for a walk, and it was so great. I wore my rainbow shirt just to maybe cheer some people up, and even waved at a couple of people driving by, walked around Wilson Park, took some pictures, and now I'm coming home, and I'm going to make some nachos. So I hope everybody's being safe. Take care, and I miss you guys. I can't wait to see everybody again.
This is David Lee Johnson in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Yeah, we ain't doing anything different because I've worked out of my house for the last 18 years. And so kind of cooking food and have a whole full house here, and all's good. So keep walking and be positive. Life as usual, and just be smart. You're listening to member-supported KUAF Fayetteville 91.3 FM. National Public Radio.
Thank you, David, Misha, and Raven. Let us know how you're doing. Still wearing that rainbow shirt? Where are you walking? How are you sharing your expertise safely with others? We're doing this all together, so let's stay connected. You can reach our KUAF Connects line by calling 479-575-6577. That's 575-6577. Let's stay in touch. This is Ozarks at Large. Is Walmart's legendary supply chain able to withstand the economic ravages of a global coronavirus pandemic? Yes, according to Matt Waller, dean of the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich spoke with Waller last week, and she brings us this report.
Along with managing his academic responsibilities at the Walton College of Business, Matt Waller researches the retail industry writ large.
My research area is retail and consumer product supply chain management. So it's pretty broad in that area, not just Walmart.
Waller has been closely monitoring retailers, including Walmart, on operational responses to the December outbreak in China, which quickly turned into an epidemic and then pandemic within just a few months. in late January. Travel to that country was discouraged. By mid-February, many businesses, including Amazon and later Walmart, began to implement remote work policies at headquarters.
Except for people who are, you know, essential, critically important to day-to-day, the home office is operating remotely at this point.
Walmart also set up an emergency operations center task force to inform store workers and staff about risks associated with the coronavirus, allowing for emergency leave. Executive and staff international travel was restricted, later domestic travel, as well as in-person conferencing. Things accelerated further after an associate in Cynthiana, Kentucky, became ill with the virus.
Walmart is probably better than any retailer at dealing with crises, and that's been true for a long time. The first time I really realized it was during Katrina.
In late August 2005, Hurricane Katrina, a Category 5 storm, devastated portions of the Gulf Coast, including the city of New Orleans, killing over 1,200 people. Federal response gravely lagged, but Walmart mobilized massive transports of food and water to survivors. In this disaster cycle, rather than respond to an avalanche of pandemic media interview requests, Walmart officials took to blogging updates and alerts on Walmart.com. For example, to address panic buying of paper cleaning and packaged food items at supercenters and local markets, the retailer has twice in the past week reduced store hours, allowing for restocking and store disinfection, now allowing elders time to shop before stores open. Waller says online purchasing for store pickup has also increased due to the pandemic.
I've seen some market research that suggests that when people try grocery pickup, they want to switch to it. And I think Walmart is probably one of the only retailers that can do it efficiently at this point.
And the company has most recently placed purchase limits on certain items targeted by hoarders.
Walmart uses a lot of truckload transportation or intermodal to get product from suppliers to their distribution centers. Those shipments tend to be homogeneous. So, you know, you might have one or just a few different types of products in a truckload. And then it's put into the distribution centers, and distribution centers are fairly close to the stores, relatively.
The retailer also does something called backhauling.
For most retailers, and it was true for Walmart for a long time, the trucks would then come back to the distribution center empty. But because Walmart is a master at backhaul, they will find supplier distribution centers or factories that are close to wherever they dropped off, you know, the load to the store, pick up a load and bring it to the DC. My point is that because Walmart is good at transporting in large quantities, you know, they're prepared for these kinds of surges more than a retailer that may have a wide variety and less volume.
And being close to distribution centers allows Walmart to quickly respond to changes in demand, he says.
Walmart's well positioned for this kind of a thing, both in terms of their transportation strategy and their inventory management.
Waller says Walmart brick-and-mortar stores are not allowed to engage in price gouging.
Walmart has something called everyday low price. You know, the promise of everyday low price is that you don't have to shop around.
Walmart has an alert app to notify headquarters of any price gouging.
So in other words, if you're a shopper and you see a price that's too high, you can report it.
As for global suppliers and hobbled international shipping ports impairing the U.S. supply chain?
A lot of the products that people are stocking up on are made domestically. So, you know, food products, paper products, hand sanitizer, soap, those kind of things tend to be made in the markets in which they're sold. What's affected more are products that have long supply chains, things like apparel, computers, electronics in general.
Waller warns that key spare parts for U.S. factory production is manufactured overseas.
So it is affecting our supply chain already. We may not see it clearly, but it's absolutely affecting it. The good thing about Walmart is that they have the largest sourcing footprint in the world.
as coronavirus case counts presently decline in China, he says, manufacturing will revive once workers are allowed to return. And post-pandemic, Waller says, we could see major product surpluses.
The factories that are making, like, say, toilet paper or hand sanitizer or bottled water, whatever it may be, is they're operating at full capacity right now. That means that those plants are ordering things from suppliers, and their suppliers are ordering things from their suppliers as fast as they can. And it goes up the whole supply chain. So all of a sudden, when coronavirus goes away, consumers will stop buying all this stuff, right? And they've got months of supply of the product in their pantries, in their house. And at the same time, the factories way upstream are producing as if this is never going to stop. And so when it stops, there's going to be a huge amount of inventory way upstream.
For the fiscal year ending late January, Walmart's total revenue was $524 billion. And despite a massive surge in panic purchasing in stores and online, Walmart's CEO, Doug McMillon, recently said on the record he expects his company to take a hit. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This weekend, did it seem like there were more people walking about where you live than usual, at least in between the rain and the storms? Anecdotally, we're hearing about people waving at each other and discussing the latest news from 6 or more feet away. We're learning all the names of all of the dogs on the block. What about getting outside further away from the front door? Toward the end of Sunday's press briefing with Governor Asa Hutchinson, a reporter asked if it's okay to get outside. Here's the governor's answer.
I've encouraged people to get out and enjoy the spring and to go hiking, to go fishing. And we can't just isolate ourselves in our homes for this long of period of time. And so get out. But when you get out, follow the social distancing. And so you can do that both. And so you can protect yourself and protect others, but still be outside. It's the open air, the space that's available out there, that should be consistent. And we followed that with our state parks as well. We've closed some of our lodge facilities, I think, but we still have it available for hiking and camping and enjoying the outdoors.
Governor Asa Hutchinson speaking Sunday afternoon at a press briefing after he was asked if it's okay during the pandemic to go outside.
Governor Asa Hutchinson declared a public health emergency March 11th after confirming Arkansas's first presumptive positive case of COVID-19. Information about the number of positive cases in the state is available at healthy.arkansas.gov. The Arkansas Department of Health has also activated a call center at 1-800-803-7847. You can keep up with local updates on our website, KUAF.com.
The Bentonville Public Library is closed and will remain closed through April 17th. Book drops at the library and community center are closed as well. All library programs are canceled through the end of April. There are online resources for Bentonville Public Library patrons, ebooks, audiobooks, access to digital magazines, tutorials to learn new skills, and much more. And while schools are closed, the library is a location for free meals. Each day, breakfast and lunch options will be available to children 18 and younger. Meals are distributed drive-through style. No eating on site will be allowed. You can find out more about this and other Bentonville Public Library news at bentonvillelibrary.org. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, state officials are alerting Arkansans to scams involving the COVID-19 pandemic.
If somebody provides you with an offer for something that doesn't make sense or seems too good to be true, or is preying on your fears and concerns, please be wary about that.
Details on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas.
Rock Island Line, here's a mighty good road. The Rock Island Line, here's a road to ride. The Rock Island Line, here's a mighty good road. And if you want to ride, you got to ride like you're flying. Buy your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. The Rock Island Line, here's a mighty good road.
This is a story of the Rock Island Line. Rock Island Line is one of the most celebrated train songs of all time. The song feels like a part of Americana that has always been with us. Actually, it's from the 20th century. It was first recorded and likely originated in Arkansas. Folklorist John Lomax and singer Leadbelly recorded Prisoners singing the Rock Island Line in fall of 1934. They actually recorded two different versions of the song at two different Southeast Arkansas prisons that fall. One in September at Tucker Prison Farm in Jefferson County, and one in October at Cummins Farm in Lincoln County near Gould. It was Leadbelly's first ever excursion with Lomax. They were funded by the Carnegie Foundation through the Library of Congress's Music Division. Little Rock was the pair's first stop on September 26th. They stayed in a tourist court outside of town and recorded two fiddling street musicians, Blind Pete and George Ryan. They'd met the musicians while waiting to get a letter from Governor Marion Futrell granting permission to record at state prisons. If you want to ride, you got to ride like you're flying. Buy your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. Lomax and Leadbelly first recorded at Tucker and later stayed at Cummins. While there, the pair were stalled for days trying to get their recorder working while also sorting out their own still new relationship. The second version of Rock Island Line, recorded at Cummins Farm, was the more memorable. They were set up by a barn when the two recorded one of the most famous songs of Arkansas. It was a group effort led by a Ouachita County-born inmate named Kelly Pace. Eight men swang their axes in time as they sang the opening lines of Rock Island Line. Leadbelly learned the song that night.
Well, Jesus died to save me and all of my sin. Oh, while it's glory to God, we're gonna meet him again. I said the Rock Island Line is a mighty good road. I said the Rock Island Line is the road you ride. I said the Rock Island Line is a mighty good road if you want to ride.
Most early versions of the song mention the train route as running between Little Rock and Memphis, which the Rock Island did at the time. But lyrically, the train's route shifted over the years away from Little Rock and the song's state of provenance in Arkansas, most often to New Orleans. 3 years after first hearing the song, Leadbelly recorded it himself for the Library of Congress in 1937, mentioning the impressive axe-cutting team he saw at Cummins in the introduction. But eventually, Rock Island Line became known strictly as a train song, not a prison work gang song. Leadbelly recorded the song commercially many times as well, beginning with RCA in 1940. During World War II, he updated the lyrics to reflect wartime troop transports and supplies being hauled on the train rather than carrying livestock.
Thank you. Now that old Rock Island Line train is getting on down the road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. Jesus died to save our sins. Glory to God, we're going to meet him again. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
Lomax recorded additional versions of the song while at Tucker and Cummins in 1939 and in 1942. For the fourth version, Camden native Kelly Pace, who had led the original Rock Island Line axe team in 1934, was back in prison and again recorded a version of Rock Island Line for the Library of Congress.
Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. A, B, C, double X, Y, Z. Cats in the cupboard, but they don't see me. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a road to ride. Oh, the Rock Island Line, it's a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
Here is the Rock Island Line by Arkansas Prisoners, led by Kelly Pace, as recorded in 1934 in Lincoln County by Lomax and Leadbelly for the Library of Congress.
I did a Rock Island Line,
my good Lord.
I did a Rock Island Line,
is the Lord your ride.
I did a Rock Island Line,
is the mighty good Lord.
If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find. Buy your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line. Well, Jesus died to save me and all of my sin. Oh, while it's glory to God, we're gonna meet him again. I said the Rock Island Line
is a mighty good road.
I said the Rock Island Line
is the road to ride.
I said the Rock Island Line
is a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Buy your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
Well, the train left Memphis at 9:30.
Well, it made it back to Little Rock at 8:49.
I said the Rock Island Line
is a mighty good road.
I said the Rock Island Line
is the road you ride.
I said the Rock Island Line
is a mighty good road. If you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Buy your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
Well, Jesus died to save me and all of my sin.
Oh, well, the glory to God, we're gonna meet him again.
I said the Rock Island Line
is a mighty good road.
I said the Rock Island Line
is the road to ride.
I said the Rock Island Line
is a mighty good road.
If you want to ride, you gotta ride it like you find. Buy your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
The Rock Island Line, as recorded in 1934 in Southeast Arkansas for the Library of Congress. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Pea Ridge. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. Contributors tonight included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, and Daniel Carruth, plus Zuzanna Sitek, who also monitored the governor's press briefing today and provided sound and information from that. Our show is mastered by Timothy Dennis from, for now, his home studio in Fayetteville. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. His most recent CD is titled Safe in Sound. All things considered, NPR and KUAF are teaming up, beginning next with a new nightly series of national conversations about COVID-19. With COVID-19 changing daily life and news breaking by the hour, it can be difficult to stay up to date. So join Ari Shapiro and the All Things Considered staff for a live conversation about what you need to know, about what's coming next, and a chance for you to have your questions answered. That begins right after this Ozarks at Large tonight and every Monday through Friday night at 8. Some phone numbers to pass along. The hotline for unemployment claims in Arkansas, 844-908-2178. That's 844-908-2178. It's answered around the clock. The number for the Northwest Arkansas Mutual Aid Pantry that Antoinette Grajeda reported on earlier is area code 479-283-8389. And to let us know how and what you're doing during this very strange spring, the KUAF Connects phone line, and we'd love to hear from you, is, again, area code 479-575-6577. 575-6577. Ozarks at Large also available as a podcast for free. You can subscribe through services like Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and others. You can also ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large. You can find past editions of our show, plus individual stories and interviews online at ozarksatlarge.com. Thanks so much for spending part of your Monday with us. We do appreciate it. We will be back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Be well, be safe. From the Rheta Bell Memorial News Studio Closet in Fayetteville, I'm Kyle Kellums.